Today I'm going to present the postdoctoral research of Flor Rodriguez in my lab. And the focus of today's talk is to look at the utility of a series of nuclear orthologs called COST markers that were developed in the laboratory of Stephen Tanksley for phylogenetic purposes. This was part of a larger grant from the USDA National Research Initiative that used these markers to look for the utility as mapping markers as well. But today, I'm going to present the work of Flor looking at the utility of these for phylogeny reconstruction. Now, why are we interested in using these markers for phylogeny in potato? I started working on potato 25 years ago, and at that time, there were big differences in phylogenetic interpretation in potato. So for example, this graph here compares alternative taxonomic treatments of four workers, Korel, Bukasov, Gorbatenko, and Hawks. And these 37 horizontal lines here represent different series classifications. So a series is a putative taxonomic category that groups species together. And so for example, this says here that Corel recognized two species in the series Commersoniana, and yet Bukasov recognized 22 species from within the entities, including synonyms, that Corel had placed in that series. And so, and he divided it into two series. So it simply represents the graphical presentation of differences, not only in the number of species that are recognized, but how these are interrelated. So clearly, there was big disagreement among taxonomists into the taxonomy of the group. How many species are there and how are they interrelated? Now, Solanum section potata, or wild and cultivated potatoes, is really a perfect storm of taxonomic complexity because it has a number of biological features that make this a very complex group. Number one, there's tremendous intergressive hybridization between the species. There is a lot of interspecific hybridization, both at the diploid and the polyploid level, and indeed about 20% of the 100 to 220 species, depending on the taxonomist, about 20% of those species are at the diploid level at 2n equal 2x equal 24, but there's also tetraploids and hexaploids in this group. And so there are both hybrids, putative hybrids at the diploid level, as well as hybrids at the polyploid level. There's sexual compatibility among many of the species. There's a mixture of sexual and asexual reproduction. So a number of these species that might be sterile can maintain themselves vegetatively by tubers. There's likely recent species divergence. There's phenotypic plasticity and consequent great morphological similarity between and among the species. Now, before this work with the COST markers was initiated, there were many studies using morphological data, a number of marker data types, as well as this. This summarizes some of the early plastid DNA restriction site variation studies, just to make the point that despite the fact that there were up to 37 different series recognized based on this plastid DNA restriction site studies, there were only four clades, four natural groups. Now, plastid DNA in most angiosperms, and indeed in potato, is maternally inherited, and nuclear markers were sought in order to get corroborative data to see whether or not those plastid phylogenies were indeed held up with biparentally inherited markers. And indeed they did, in the sense that these same four clades were supported, except two of the clades, clades one and two, were united together. So the point I'm making here is that using a range of markers, both nuclear markers and plastid markers. The phylogeny was very similar, except two of the clades were united in clade 1 plus 2 in the nuclear markers. Also, the nuclear markers were able to show allopolyploid origins that were impossible to show in the plastid markers, because you can end up getting markers of both parents. And what this showed, for example, in these species in green here, is that some of the polyploids, these being species technically called Solanum series canisivacata, they had long fruits, they had alleles in two of the clades. So they were in these clades here, in clade 3, and also in clade 4. So this also showed complexity within the group, in that there was allopolyploid origins, and we were able to tell from what clades these polyploids were formed from. Okay, so why am I showing this? I'm showing this because up to this point, there's still a lot of confusion. What's a species? We're starting to get at the point of how are they interrelated with the concordance of markers, looking at four or three clades, depending on whether we're looking at plastid or nuclear markers. But we're still dealing with a relatively limited number of marker types. Well, in the recent years, taxonomists are interested in looking at a number of marker types, with the idea that oftentimes different markers give very different answers. And there was a paper published in Nature, and I was at the presentation of this talk just before this was published, by Antonio Rocas and other authors at the University of Wisconsin. And what this shows is 12 different alternative phylogenies of 7 species of yeast, with an outgroup at the base here, Candida albicans. And what these researchers had is complete genome sequences from all of these species, and using bioinformatic approaches, they were able to choose 7 nuclear orthologs that were common to all of these species. So their basic question was, how much data is needed before you start to converge on a well-resolved answer? And what they found using these 106 markers is that sometimes alternative genes gave totally different answers with very well-supported bootstrap values. Now, these numbers here are bootstrap values, and a bootstrap value is just it's a statistic that you can get through reiterative running of the data by sampling with replacement, by using different components of the markers. And what this showed is that sometimes different genes gave very well-resolved topologies or trees, and yet they were different among each other. So this started then raising the awareness among taxonomists that sometimes if you're looking for a relationship between individuals, single genes really are going to give you sometimes a very poorly it's going to give you a poor answer of relationship. Not necessarily a poor answer, but different genes give very different answers, and people are kind of scratching their heads, why might that be? But we were interested in following through with this type of analysis using a similar technique of using a number of well-characterized nuclear single-copy genes, or nuclear orthologs. So what we did is we selected these COS markers that covered all the 12 linkage groups in potato. They were single copy in at least tomato and potato. We looked at a sequence amplification length that we could get with single pass sequencing, so 700 to 1200 base pairs. And we were interested in high intron content because of the close relationship of the species within tomato and potato, and introns are they're more variable. And what Flohr found was that using all of these markers together, we found this tree to date represents the most complete resolution of phylogeny in all the tomato species, and this is literally all the tomato species in this part of the clade, and then a representative subset of eight different representative potato species. So this showed that indeed using all of these costs together gave us a very well-resolved phylogeny, but very quickly, like the Rokas et al. Paper, we found that some of the markers, even though this was a marker using all the data together, some of the markers conflicted, and you could get very different trees, very different topologies using different sets of markers. Just very quickly, this study here was an expansion of the paper of that tree that was just published in BMC Evolutionary Biology. And we wish to have many more species. Like before, we used all 13 tomato species, but we used 47 potatoes rather than just eight potatoes. And we more than doubled the number of cost markers. And we came up with a tree that, like the prior tree, using all the cost markers, had a very well-resolved phylogeny in the sense that many of these branches had high bootstrap values, and the topology was very similar to that before. There were three major clades. And the basic conclusion of this is that we really didn't need all this data to come up with a well-resolved phylogeny, so we're starting to narrow down on the number of cost markers that are needed. You don't need to use this much data to get a well-resolved phylogeny. Basically, what's this useful for? I work for a so what agency, the Department of Agriculture, where impact is a very important thing. And what we're doing is we're using this phylogeny for extended questions, such as looking at what's the reason for the discordance between these various markers. We're using this phylogeny to set up initial core collections in potatoes, and it's the basis for further evolutionary studies, and we're using this for screening studies for useful traits, and we're using this also to address questions of what's the relationship between a taxonomy and traits of interest, essentially asking the question, is taxonomy predictive by associating disease resistance to taxonomy? Thank you. Any questions?
Yes, we have time. We have time for one or two questions.
Sylvia?
Oh,
sorry.
No, it's just that it's a new person asking questions. So, wait, go ahead.
How many of the alleles for each marker?
Well, I do have general statistics in the tree. Let's see. Of the 24 costs, in total, the total aligned data set was 24,664 markers. The phylogenetically informative characters for this group of aligned markers was over 4,000, 4,092. So that would be one way to answer that, the number of, to get to that question, how much data do we have in this? And when you construct a tree, you can look at the number of markers that actually are used to construct the branches. So we had 4,000 markers within those, within this tree.
Sylvia, myself, and a couple of other collaborators, Brian Diaz and Alina Mack, we took a very similar approach, but the trans-species is soybeans, that's what we were. We had close to 100 soybean germplasm lines. All of the accessions resistant to soybean system, how they are interrelated, we don't know, since they all came from China, Korea, and Japan. We took a very similar approach. On protein-linkage groups, we put markers at every 5 cent markers, a marker. At different times, you got different results.
You mean using different marker types?
Absolutely, yeah. With the RFFP markers we started using in 92, 93, later on, when the SSR markers were available, we used the SSRs. But anyway, the bottom line is, it had a value. You know, we were able to figure out some unique lines based on two or three different studies, but it worked in soybean.
Well, it's interesting. What you mentioned, you were the data that we used were DNA sequence data. You used marker data, and there's been a number of papers published looking at concordance between different marker types. So, for example, people have compared AFLPs to SSRs to nuclear RFLPs to rapids, say. And I know in potato this was done, yet you would expect to get different topologies in the tree based on marker type, because some of those markers have inherently different degrees of polymorphism. So, for example, SSRs are extremely useful for very closely related germplasm sets, and it might be very useful for an intraspecific study, but for interspecific studies, sometimes they're very poor because they're hypervariable. The mutations get saturated in a tree of species that are very far apart. And so sometimes the discordance between different marker types is expected just because of the very nature of the markers. And you've got to choose your markers very carefully according to the question you're addressing. Yes?
There is a conclusion behind this, right? So there must be some true topology. If we would be able to sequence the whole genome of different species, would that end that game of making new trees all 5 years?
That's a beautiful question. Why do you get different topologies? And there's different theoretical reasons why that might occur. One reason is potato has a history of hybridization. There's poor sexual barriers between many of these species. And so some of the different regions of the genome that where those markers are located show different topologies might be a result of interspecific hybridization. Some of the discordance might be due to a phenomenon called incomplete lineage sorting. You're looking at genes that where the variation has not sorted out in the evolutionary history of the tree. There's actually a couple papers where people look at, they explore this question of taxonomic discordance. There was a paper by Wendell and Doyle published in 1998, and they looked at 12 different potential reasons why different markers give different reasons. There's other potential reasons, such as horizontal gene transfer. That's really pretty poorly documented in plants, but at least theoretically that's a reason. But the two major reasons that people commonly cite for this phenomenon is incomplete lineage sorting and interspecific hybridization.
Can we wait that after the next talk? We have a missing talk.
We'll talk later, Sylvia.
Thank you, Dr. Spooner, again.
Thank you.